Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Hello out there. I'm not getting any indication that I'm connected again. I've been kicked off a couple of times, so I'm going to proceed believing that you are there and that this transmission is being received, that all things are working in divine order. My name is Joanne Buckner, and I am your host on Beauty Shop for the Soul. And Beauty Shop for the Soul, for those of you who may not be familiar with this, it is a program of transformation. And, of course, every single person on the planet is always in the process of transformation, consciously or unconsciously. In fact, ironically, much of the transformation is done unconsciously through the experiences that we have of manifesting the undesired or the undesirable. And if that could be attributed to the fact that so many people are not aware of their ability to direct their lives according to their desires. Now, that doesn't mean that you get to manipulate the world, anyone outside of yourself, but you can direct your thinking. And you know, you probably have heard the quote before, where the mind goes, the behind follows. Well, if you choose a path that is not in alignment with the highest good for yourself or the highest good for others as well, then probably you're going to have more opportunities for transformation. And, of course, if you don't recognize that it is such a thing as an opportunity when these things are happening, and it appears to you that someone else has been the cause of it, woe be unto you. I'm saying that a little bit tongue-in-cheek, but it really is the truth, because everything works according to universal law. And when we're on the downside of the law, meaning that we're operating unaware that everything operates according to these universal laws, and ignorance of the law is no excuse. The fact that we know not that the law exists, the fact that we choose not to honor it or recognize it, none of those things stop or inhibit the law from working. So if there's something going on that's causing you pain, physically, mentally, emotionally, financially, and otherwise, you might want to take a look at which side of the law you're operating on. And this doesn't mean I'm not talking man-made law. We're talking universal law, spiritual law. And, of course, the law works the same exact way for everybody, no matter who you are or where you are. In the same way that the law of gravity works in Tokyo, Japan, just as much as it does in San Francisco, California, or Detroit, Michigan, or New York City, for that matter, Australia, wherever you are, we are, anyone is on the planet. If you leap from a tall building, the law of gravity is going to carry you down. And it doesn't matter what your religion, your race, creed, or color, your weight, your size, that's just the way it is. And so the same thing is happening when we talk about spiritual laws or universal laws. Think about and what happens when you put seeds, when you sow them into fertile soil, and then, of course, you've done your part, and except, of course, the soil has to be cultivated to make it receptive to the DNA that's in the seed. just like an oak tree is in an acorn, every single thing that's needed for that oak tree to become the magnificent tree that it's become, it's in that little tiny acorn. The same thing is true for you and I and every other part of God's creation, or the creator of all things, however you would want to address that infinite intelligence, that power that is omnipotent, omniscient, and everywhere present and available 24/7. And so when we sow seeds into the seed that you have sown into it and will multiply, you don't get tit for tat when you sow seeds into the soil. No, they multiply after their own kind. So if you want to grow corn, tomatoes, potatoes, the soil doesn't care. And it's not going to rationalize that maybe you might have wanted something different than what you, the seed that you have sown. It's going to give you with precision exactly, without any dispute, the corresponding outcome or output or outpicture to the seed that you sowed. And so potatoes get potatoes, tomatoes get tomatoes. If you're sowing seeds of unrest, anger, lack, limitation, separation, negation of any kind, the only thing that you can get back is the law works by responding. It responds by corresponding. And so think that we have been, or I'll just use a hypothetical situation, offended by someone or something outside of ourselves, and we certainly have not initiated anything according to our perception, and everything is perception. However, the thing that I have discovered over many years in working with these laws for my own transformation, and by the way, Beauty Shop for the Soul, is this place where, for me as much as it is for anyone else, there's always transformation going on. And as I look back over my life and the experiences that I have, I can tell you about times when someone else had instigated a behavior perpetuated toward me, and in some cases I felt offended and some not, but the way that I was raised in the culture that I grew up in, we were trained not to initiate conflict. However, we were required to defend ourselves. And what is defense about? Well, actually, defense is about maintaining the status quo. So, you know, that's what the military is about. It is to protect the status quo. And when we are defending a thought, a belief, a behavior, it is because truth stands alone. It doesn't require defense. And truth crushed to earth will always rise again. And so when we are standing in truth, we do not, I repeat, do not have to defend it at all. Now, because of the way that we've been conditioned over many years, we may be inclined to do so. But the very fact that you feel inclined to do so suggests a level of uncertainty about the thing you're taking a stand for. So it involves a level of trust as well, trust in the universe, trust in that intelligence that is everywhere present, and surely the same intelligence that made the sun and moon and stars and set them into the heavens is the same intelligence that's operating in you, through you, and around you. And all that you are is already encoded in every single cell, those trillions of cells in your body. Every single one is a hologram of the original cell from which you started out from which I and all of us started out from this single cell. And so I want to talk to you about Beauty Shop for the Soul. You know, in the traditional beauty shop, historically, most people who go, and now men, many men go to the beauty shop as well as women. At one time when I was growing up, it was pretty much only women, and there was a routine that generally the pattern was to go every 2 weeks to get a new do, to get your head done again. And, of course, some people, depending upon the arena in which they work, they may go back for a touch-up in between. But for the average person, the average, every meaning, not average in terms of who you are, but in terms of how you show up in the field of employment. You know, whether you had a high-profile position or you were a celebrity of some kind, then you might go every week. But just the regular routine job, then pretty much, and especially the regular routine job paid less money, and so it's likely that those who had those jobs could not afford to go as often as the high-profile people who had, of course, the money to afford to pay to go as often as they would need to. But when you go to the traditional beauty shop, the first thing you do is have your hair assessed. It's not that you have it done. That's just their MO. They look at your hair, they tell you what they find, and then they make recommendations. Well, the similarities, which those of you who have heard this before, yes, be still and be patient while I tell some of those who haven't heard what it is. So as a client with Beauty Shop for the Soul, you would have already made some assessment. In other words, as you look at your life and see what is incongruent according to your desires. Now, that doesn't mean it's illegal, immoral, or illicit at all. And just as in one of my personal experiences where after many years of working many jobs in many places, I retired. And after that retirement, I relocated. And after the relocation, I had retired unexpectedly because they offered an early out. And since I had spent many, many years, as I said, working many jobs, I was really eager to retire. The thing is that in all of my relocating prior to retirement, I had withdrawn my retirement funds more than once, and of course in the early years there was an intention to pay that money back. It just did not turn out that way, not at all. And so now this seeming opportunity appeared that I could have an early out with X number of years there, and so I accepted that invitation. However, the funds that were there did not match the number of years of service because I had never paid it back. So fast forward. As I relocated to the new place, I found that it would be better, financially speaking, to increase my income, and now I had plenty more hours to work, and since I had a retirement already, even though it wasn't what I would have preferred, it did give me a little bit of leeway in that I could work other jobs, what have you. And so I did that, and I chose something that I was skilled in. I had experience and expertise. I did it very well. That was in the area of teaching, and I had taught off and on for a number of years. But guess what? As I started this new position, it was not complicated. It was not difficult. It was in the same language as my native language, which I'm speaking to you in now. But quickly, I observed that every day when I returned home, I arrived home exhausted. Now, I could not attribute this, that is, externally. It wasn't happening. And so I had to ask the question, why am I feeling exhausted here? And I began to observe this pattern. I wasn't even working every day in the week. I would work 3 days a week, preferably, and that would give me time to just have, I guess you could say, leisure time. But as I began to observe this pattern of fatigue and exhaustion, it occurred to me that I had made a choice. And the choice that I made was not, as I said earlier, illegal or immoral. It looked perfectly okay since I had the credentials and the qualification, the certification and all that. But what was given to me was, at this particular time in my life, it was not in alignment with the purpose for which I had come, not to this city, but on this planet and at this time. And so I made a Phi Beta Kappa decision, and I quit that job that I had chosen. Now, why would I do that, you might say? And maybe some of you out there are doing that and having a similar experience. Well, let me just share with you the potential for what can happen. You know, there's a scripture that says, seek ye first the kingdom of heaven and all else will be added unto you. So what is the kingdom of heaven but a higher consciousness? That's the consciousness that you transcend whatever the human circumstances may be providing for us at any given moment. And so I had made this choice, and it was nothing really wrong with the choice. It just was incongruent with the purpose that I'm here for. And so I decided to, as I say, I had retired, and so now I decided that I would resign from the position that I had chosen. And the moment that I resigned, it was like an energy lifted, and money began to circulate more freely in my life. And, of course, what happens when we make these decisions independent of going within, in other words, turning away from the illusions of the world. The illusions are what tells us that something's missing, something's broken, something's left out. And so as we began now to not look around outside of ourselves, but to turn within, that journey is the shortest distance but the longest time. Metaphysical interpretation or spiritual interpretation of them. And you know there's one that says, where two or three are gathered together in my name, meaning in my nature, there am I in the midst of them. And so it literally, when there are two or three people gathered together for the same purpose, there's a synergy that occurs that would never manifest if any one of the two or three individuals did what they were doing individually, independently. Two people together would produce a third energy, whereas each one individually would not be able to achieve 50% of what the two had done together. And so when we get our, as Emerson said, bloated nothingness in the way of the divine circuit, something happens here, and it interferes with the process and the progress and the potential to be all that we came to be. And so as things began to open up, I had this, you could say, revelation in a new direction, and that's another show at another time. Today, this whole thing is about this segment, forgiveness. And what is forgiveness? But to give up the consciousness of lack, limitation, separation, negation, condemnation, regret, revenge, remorse, and all that, to give that up for the peace, poise, power, the joy, the prosperity, and all the things that are on the upside of the law. The law is, it is done unto you as you believe. There are also other laws involved. The law of circulation or the law of reciprocity, whatever goes out from us returns to us like a boomerang or like the seeds in the soil. It is going to multiply exponentially. And so our thoughts are actually our seeds. And the soul, what would that be? The subconscious mind. And so when we put these seeds into that fertile soil of the subconscious mind, it does not rationalize that something could cause you pain. And in that consciousness, the higher consciousness, when we lift up our eyes and to the heels, meaning raise our consciousness above the level that says, I don't make enough, I need to work a second job. I've retired, but what I have is not sufficient. There is no insufficiency in the kingdom of heaven consciousness. When we lift up our eyes, we can see into the distance because we connect at a different vibrational frequency than we were operating at when we saw less than, when we saw separation, brokenness, lack, and so forth and so on. The same thing is true when we are experiencing and expressing frustration, anger, and all those emotions that are quote-unquote negative. So it requires a practice. There's something called the mental equivalent. Emmett Fox, in fact, wrote a book called The Mental Equivalent. He was one of the earlier metaphysicians. And so everything must multiply after its own kind, every thought. That is your seed. And if it's a seed of doubt, then you get more things to doubt. If it's a seed of faith, then you are stepping out of the box, so to speak. And so in this idea of forgiveness. Someone said to me recently that we need to forgive such and such for such and such a reason. And so my response to them was that actually we don't need to forgive. The law takes care of itself. You know, another scripture that says the battle is not mine, it's the Lord. And Lord means law. It's the law. And you cannot, I mean, a man-made law, if you violated a traffic law and the traffic officer wasn't around, you could probably get by. But eventually, if you continue to repeat that kind of action, you would be likely you would run into some difficulty or some trouble. But with spiritual law, it is so precise, and it doesn't care who you are, where you are, or what excuse you have for doing what you did. It is going to come back, and the more it seems like you're getting by or getting away, the bigger and bigger it gets until eventually it's like a crescendo, or you could say a spiritual 2x4, because there are a lot of little things called life. And as we go through it then, we have these opportunities that give us these windows of opportunity to grow. And we grow how? By learning about the choices that we make. Because we've been endowed from the very beginning with this potential to make choices. The creator of all things, in the days of creation, at the end of each day, declared all that had been created on that particular day good. So how many times do you decree and declare that what you have done through the course of a day, do you look back over the day and declare it to be good? Or are you looking back with some frustration that you didn't do all that you thought, even though you hadn't prioritized it, you allowed interruptions, whatever the pattern was, do you look back over your day and declare it to be good? So much of our forgiveness, or pretty much all of it, is going to start with us forgiving ourselves for being critical and judgmental of ourselves. And, of course, as we are this with ourselves, guess what? We are this with other people as well. And so there are some people that say, I can forgive, but I can't forget. Well, they haven't really forgiven either. And mostly they haven't forgiven themselves, and chances are the thing that they've not forgiven themselves about is something that is so far back in the past that they don't see a connection. It's been buried alive, and the things that are buried alive pick up a lot of dust, and that dust eventually will choke you. So I've seen TV programs, and I've actually talked to people as a I worked in a program where people came to, discover how to deal with forgiveness and many other of the life challenges. And so I've seen 4 or 5 people that have had tragedy, traumas, where a loved one has been taken from them by someone else through an act of violence. And often there's such anger and such hatred, and they vow to never forgive the person who has done this egregious thing that has happened. However, invariably, for one of those 5 or 6 people, will stand up and say, I forgive. I remember one such case where a mother forgave the man who had killed her son, and over time became like the surrogate mother to that young man. And so I wanted to talk to you about that. I had this privilege to meet a wonderful woman whose name is Immaculée Ilibagiza. Immaculée is from Rwanda. And back in the 1990s, Immaculée, or Rwanda, experienced this devastating over 1 million people who were killed in 91 days' time. 3 months we're talking about. And so Immaculée, as well as some of the others, she initially was away at school, but when this unrest began to unfold, her family sent for her to come home, and then they rushed her off to a neighbor who was not immediately close hand happened to be from another tribe. And so they sent her there without any, what would you say, expectation that this unrest would continue on for 90 days and that by the time the 90 days passed, that she'd been murdered. And so for Immaculate, she was sent to the home of a minister. And she and seven other women were tucked into a, I hesitate to call it a bathroom. It was a room with a commode, I believe, and a wash bowl, but not enough room for eight people. And so what they had to, to sit separately. And so Immaculate and all of these women, none of whom had known each other prior to that time, they had to sit most of the day and night stacked on top of each other like chairs. And in the meantime, the rebels were circulating through the village areas and calling the names of the people that they knew that they had not yet captured and making violent threats about what they would do to them when they caught them. And they would let them know that they had killed certain people in their family. And so Immaculate could hear that her parents had been killed, that her siblings, her grandparents, her aunts and uncles and cousins and so forth and so on. And, of course, not only was she terrorized, but she was very angry and very fearful, according to her story. But she prayed, and in the meantime, a part of her time, a great deal of her time was spent in prayer, but she was so disturbed that these people whom she had known really all her life had literally murdered her family and were intending to do the same thing with her. And so for a moment, she wished that she too had some ammunition, that she had a gun, that she would, what she would do. And then she said she heard a voice. And the voice says, how does that make you any better or any different than them? And it was an epiphany or a revelation for Immaculate. And so she realized then that the only thing that she could do, still be in alignment with the Christ mind, is to forgive these people who had destroyed her family and impacted her life so severely. Now, while they were there in this room, they had very little to eat. They had to remain silent. Their natural functions that occur with everybody every day, and so they could not very well handle these things. And so imagine the kind of environment that they were entrapped in, so to speak. And so they were only allowed to go outside in the middle of the night, you know, during the moonlight hours. And the person that was hiding them out was actually a member of the rebel tribe, not having realized that this thing would go this far. And so now that it had, he himself was caught between a rock and a hard place because he couldn't let them know that he was hiding people out because they would take his life. But he also could not buy more food and things. And so here these eight women were trapped in this room. And in order to save their lives, they had to eat what was given to them. They didn't have an opportunity to stretch very much. They had no way to comb their hair and various other things that would be done. And so to fast forward with this story, because it could go on, it's a wonderful book that's called Left to Tell. Immaculate concluded eventually when they were freed after 91 days, and she had gone in weighing 115 pounds and came out weighing 65. Imagine. I don't know her height. I had the privilege of meeting Immaculate at the I Can Do It conference, and that's interesting because that title did not come from her experience, but it was that, you might say, admonishing to all of us that you can do it. In fact, it was, was it Edison that said, think you can or think you cannot. Either way, you will be right. No, it was Henry Ford. Think you can or think you cannot. Either way, you will be right. And so the conference was I Can Do It conference, and Immaculate was there. I had this privilege of walking with her and talking with her briefly, and I, of course, attended her workshop. And I have to tell you that for someone who had survived all of the challenges. She even taught herself to speak English. She went into hiding, not speaking English at all, and came out with sufficient English developed through the use of a dictionary. And so the amazing thing, when she was released, some of her tribesmen who were outside waiting for her, they expected her to be very angry and hostile, etc., and now they had captured the rebel tribesmen, and they wanted her, they invited her to do what she wanted and all she would say and could say was that she forgave them, which angered her tribesmen. But Immaculate went to the U.S. Embassy, weighing 65 pounds, hair matted, and so forth. Imagine, I'm just saying that for you to get the appearance or the courage in the heart of this woman, that she could hold her head up and that she could do what she had at the U.S. Embassy. And, of course, the first day and for a number of times afterwards, they informed her that they had no position available. But she would not be moved. And so Immaculate continued to go there. Each day, every day she went back. And every day she got the same response until at some point, I don't remember the number of days, but they hired her. They hired Immaculate Gilibigiza to work at the U.S. Embassy. I wonder how many of you out there, I wonder about myself, what might I have done under similar, would I to be able to forgive someone who had murdered my mother, my father, my sisters, my brothers, all of my extended family, except there was one brother that she had who was away in college or away at school, just as she had been away. But they didn't bring the brother home. But this was her story. And so this is an extraordinary example of someone who was able to forgive someone who had committed such a heinous crime as to murder every single person in the entire family. And so, by the way, anyone that would like to speak, you can push the number one, and I see that it's been pushed, so I'm going to bring on a caller in just a minute. And when I return, I want to share a couple more instances where somebody has been able to, and I've met each of these people, their situation has been different than Immaculate in the circumstances that brought it about, but the result was similar in that a loved one was taken from them. And through their grief and through their, you could say, restoration process, they saw that ultimately there was far more damage being done internally, mentally, emotionally, and otherwise to themselves than it would be if they forgave the person or person, which it was in a couple of cases. But in the meantime, we've had a little bit of a challenge with this studio online today, so I'm going to see what happens here. Hello, area code 619.
Hi.
Where are you calling from, and what's your first name?
I'm sorry, what was your question? Yes.
Okay, it's breaking up just a little bit. Tell me your name again.
My name's Catherine.
Catherine. Hi, Catherine. And you're calling from 619. Is that San Diego?
Yes.
Oh, good. Hello, Catherine from San Diego. And how did you hear about Beauty Shop for the Soul?
I was just searching right now through Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, good. And, well, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, yeah, and I just saw your live show was on, so I thought I'd give a call in.
Well, thank you. Did you see or hear that the theme for today is about forgiveness?
Actually, I don't know what your guys' topic is for today. I just got in right now, so I'm a little late.
Okay, no problem. Well, Beauty Shop for the Soul, as I've explained briefly, and say that again. Hello?
Oh, no, I'm listening.
Oh, okay, cool. Well, I know that you know the process that occurs in the traditional beauty shop. You know, you go there and the technician assesses your hair and your scalp and tells you what they find, and then they make recommendations to bring your hair back in condition. And then there's a shampooing process. So you have the assessment, the shampooing, and then you have a conditioning, and then you get to choose the style and so forth and so on. So Beauty Shop for the Soul, it has some similarities in the process, in the procedure you go through. However, the client in Beauty Shop for the Soul will have made an assessment of their own life experience. And that doesn't mean that it was necessarily a quote-unquote bad experience, but just recognizing that there's an infinitely abundant universe that we're living in, and there's so much more available that you don't. I have a book that it says, it was the title of this book, You Were Born an Original, and You Don't Have to Die a Copy. And so, you know, sometimes we spend a lot of time copying something else or someone else, and we're never really happy about that. Well, if we began to have an assessment of ourselves, because we're the only ones who could make that decision, then we have to clear out, you know, some of us have been programmed by people that said that because we are too this or not enough of that, or, you know, whether it's religion, race, creed, color, size, country of origin, it doesn't matter. All of these things come into play sometimes with people who feel been limited in their opportunities for expansion in life. And so these are the thoughts that have to be purged, or that's where the clearing comes. So like in the traditional beauty shop, they would be looking at your scalp and hair and telling you what they find. Well, you would be looking at the way you think. And, you know, there's a scripture and a book that's called As a Man Thinketh in His Heart, So Is He. And so, of course, that's true. It's a generic use of the word man. But if we believe that we are unworthy or incapable of doing things, then, of course, that's exactly what happens, not because it has to be that way, but because that's the way the law works. I'm talking spiritual law. So we'd have the assessment, which would be done by the client, and then there would be that cleansing, that purification, and then there would be a conditioning. And of course, in the traditional beauty shop, there was a time when historically women would often go maybe a couple of times a month. But in Beauty Shop for the Soul, one would be, it would behoove us to assess how we think every day. There are so many things, the aspects of our lives, our health, our finances, our careers, our family, relationships, all of those areas. And for most of us, there are some incongruencies with those different areas. And so, of course, it is an achievement to recognize that and to work to bring the balance into those aspects of your life. That's what Beauty Shop for the Soul is about. And, of course, they're not so subtle, because it's not like you're doing something illegal, immoral, or illicit. It is just the way that we've been trained to look at things, the way we look at things. And so that's, in a nutshell, what Beauty Shop for the Soul is about. And I was just sharing a situation where this woman who was from Rwanda, and they had a genocide there where 1 million people were killed in 90 days, which included her immediate and extended family. And yet, miraculous is simply a demonstration of spiritual law applied, a spontaneous demonstration. Well, this young lady, her name was Immaculate Ilibagiza. She was able to forgive these people who had murdered her parents, her siblings, and all of her extended family. So there are many people that feel that they could not forgive things that have happened to them in their lives. So you're invited to share an experience, whether you were or were not able to forgive, and what happened if you didn't, and what happened if you did, or however you would like to explore that. So when you pushed number one, did you have a particular thing in mind that you wanted to ask about or make a comment about?
Basically, I'm the one right now trying to receive forgiveness, and I've tried to apologize to people, and my apology has been rejected and not accepted, and so it just really hurts because it is just really disappointing, so...
Okay, so can you talk a little bit more about that?
Well, one of it involves my ex-boyfriend, and so I felt like I owed him an apology, you know, without expecting an apology from him. I was going to take accountability, you know, for my actions, and I'm just one of those that just wanted to, you know, just leave on good terms. At least they know I'm sorry. But he wasn't willing to accept my apology, so it's really hard because, you know, he's not the person that I knew. The person that I knew would be willing to listen to someone apologize. So in this case, it's just really disappointing.
But Kathy, our Catherine, I'm sorry, didn't mean to give you a nickname there. Catherine, you know, who can we change outside of ourselves?
Nobody.
That's right. Exactly. Nobody. And so I heard you say that you're disappointed. So you're disappointed. Where does that disappointment come from, you think?
My heart. I mean, you
but
know.
There, I see, well, your heart, could it, there's another place that probably it comes from. Think about it for a moment. And maybe not even, if you just set aside for a moment, the particular incident, because I'm sure you have, you know, some attachment to the outcome. I've heard you state that. But in general, when we're disappointed because it or did not happen.
Right.
Yeah, that's a question.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, you're hoping for the best.
Okay, but wait a minute. Hold up. Let's just take one part at a time. So where does the hope come from? Does that come from your heart?
Yes.
How about from your head? You have an expectation, you know, of yourself and of someone else. And, you know, in general, I mean, you know, the things usually when we run into conflict and confusion, we're not operating from our heart. We're operating from our head. And, you know, we have a certain expectation. And when those expectations don't happen, then we feel disappointed. But if you cannot change anybody else and the only person you could change is you, then how would you ever be happy?
Right. That's a good point.
So, you know, I don't know if you're familiar with Buddha or Buddhism, but, you know, Buddha, one of the things that Buddha said is the cause of our happiness and the condition for everybody else's happiness. Because, you know, we are all vibrational beings. We are always radiating energy. Everything in the universe has energy. So the energy of our thoughts are always radiating out from us, and that creates a condition for everybody else. But the same thing applies for our unhappiness. When we're unhappy, it is our thoughts, our thinking, that is the cause of that. What ties in to the expectation, the hope that somebody would forgive you, but maybe they're not in that place. And in fact, whenever we are seeing ourselves or someone else in a condition less than what they were created to be, we're looking amiss. In other words, we're not seeing them as they were created to be, and when we are perpetuating a behavior, we're not operating according to the way we were created to be. Created from an essence that was pure, that is pure, that is always the same. And so, of course, in the process of moving through life, we have these experiences, and that's how we grow, you know, is to have, you know, the pain that I'm hearing you speak about, you know, it makes you want to do something to alleviate the pain, but you can't do it with somebody else. As you do it with yourself, other people will be healed. You know, the planet, that energy will be what's going out from you. So you, according to what I'm hearing, and you can correct me, you've done some things that you feel you need to apologize for. So there's some things that you believe that either you should have done or should not have done. And so at you've reached a point where you want to make amends for those things. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. So while you were doing those things, there was some part of you, what preceded, pick any one of those incidents and look back and see what was happening in your life at that time when you made a decision that led you to do something that you later regret.
Like what made me do what
well,
I did?
Well, yes, I'm not asking you to tell me what you did. I'm asking you to look at what was happening in your life at the time that you made any one of those decisions.
Okay.
Can you recall an incident?
Yes.
Okay. So tell me what was happening in your life at that time that motivated you. Huh?
I was just under a lot of stress, and my sadness turned it.
Okay, so when you're under stress, what happens to your body?
My sadness turns to anger.
That's emotionally. So biochemically, there's something that happens in your body when you're under stress. You know, there's a biochemical thing that goes on, right?
Yeah.
That's why people perspire. You know, they get hot or they get cold. There are many things that indicate stress in the body. And one of them is, you know, notice how your breath changes when you get disturbed. Have you ever noticed?
Yeah.
You know, in fact, the first thing that most people will say is take a deep breath, take a deep breath. Because the moment we begin to take a deep breath, we allow then the oxygen to flow in our body. Where, you know, when we get traumatized, even if it's not, you can be traumatized watching a movie. It doesn't have to be a live incident and your, you know, that part of your mind, the subconscious mind, it doesn't know reality from, you know, from a movie or a story or those incidents. It takes everything in the subconscious mind is acted upon as though it is right now. So, and usually the things that trigger us have to do with something that has happened in the time on that, then we just reinforce the thing that we don't want to have happening anyway. So when you were stressed, you weren't acting according to the way that you're created to because you wouldn't be stressed. Your natural heritage, the essence from which you were created, is always perfect and complete. But we accumulate thoughts and beliefs and ideas and things that were not in alignment with that, and then we act from those things, and it causes us stress. So to get back to your situation, excuse me, as, you know, this person, what would you do if... you know, the person that or persons that were involved, there's more than one person that you want to make amends with. But sometimes these people have already left the planet, which means that you could not really talk to them. Well, if that were the thing that's going to determine your forgiveness, you might have to live the rest of your life not being forgiven. So the work is an internal process. It's not external. I mean, it would be a really great thing. For the people that
I'm sorry.
We have.
I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. Thank you, but I have to go right now.
Wait a minute. Say that again.
I'm sorry, but I have to end the call right now. Thank you.
Oh, that's okay. Bless you. Thank you for calling. Continue on with this aspect of forgiveness. Forgiveness is not an easy thing to do, and primarily because it requires us to take a hard look at ourselves, to look at the way that we treat ourselves, to look at the way that we treat other people. And, again, of course, some of the times that I know that I've had opinions about myself or others, like, for example, I can remember thinking, wondering why I had not been blessed with a certain talent or skill or ability that it appeared that other people had. But the truth of it is we're all endowed with that same divine essence, and we have the same potential and possibilities. But there are some of us who use this, who tap into this universal intelligence and come out with more than those of us who have not had that revelation or that insight. Well, as I look back at things that I'm the mother of three children, and I can remember a time many years ago when my children were young, and one of the older kids was speaking in a very harsh tone to the youngest child. And the older one, so I chastised the older one, and I pointed out that there was only one parent. I was divorced at that time. And the sound of the voice of the older child was very authoritative and et cetera. And I said to this child, "Who do you think you are?" And the response was, "Nobody." And I remember being shocked at that response. I totally did not expect that kind of response. And unfortunately, I did not address it appropriately. But I didn't realize that I had not addressed it appropriately. It was, in fact, some years to come. But somehow I knew in my soul that there was something that needed to be said at that time to correct his perception of himself. Nobody. Everybody is somebody. And I missed an opportunity at that time to have a chat with each of these children, to let them know who they are and whose they are. And there's much more to this story, but over many years, as I observed my children become a young adult, and I could see certain behaviors with the older child, and I realized that that was a profound statement that was made by this child, now young man, when he was maybe 11 or 12 years of age, and that I myself had missed the boat. So one of the things that I forgive myself for is not having understood in the way that I would have preferred to understand, so that I could help somebody else understand, because we first have to have it before we can share it. And so that is a challenge for all parents, and it's just a challenge for people in general. The story that I shared earlier about Immaculate Gili Bagiza, who is a Rwandan refugee after a time, well, actually, by the time she was rescued, and that's another story that if you tuned in late, you might want to go into the archives and listen to the story, because it's about forgiveness. And there are some things that seem impossible, but that's because we are trying to handle this in the human consciousness. But it is only when we get our, as Emerson said, bloated nothingness out of the way and allow the divine circuits to work, and we recognize that we're really not doing it ourselves. We're just getting out of the way and allowing the divine essence in us to guide what we need to know, say, do, or be. And at this moment, what we are going to do is close the program for today. Have a wonderful, blessed week and a blessed life day by day by day, every day.
Thank you for listening to Beauty Shop for the Soul with host Joanne Buckner.
here on Earth Angels Radio. For more information on Joanne, please visit earthangelsradio.com. You can also contact Joanne by email at ourbeautifulsouls@gmail.com or call her at 702-622-4937. What better way to transform than a day at the beauty shop? Beauty shop for the soul.
Hola, somos Amway, somos los que toman las riendas de sus vidas, somos los que decidimos nuestra propia oficina perfecta, somos los que poco a poco conseguimos algo más, somos los soñadores que no se duermen, y tú...
in a restaurant, like the guaranteed way to avoid